This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dr. Timothy Salthouse is the lab director at the Salthouse Cognitive Aging Lab at the University of Virginia, and his research on aging has made international headlines over the last week, and we are honored to welcome him live to the WINA studios. How are you, sir?
Fine, thanks.
Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. I have to ask you first, what was your reaction to all of these headlines? Just everybody was talking about the fact that, you know, UVA researcher shows that aging really begins at 27, not at 40 or 60, that we, you know, our brains start to decline actually in our 20s.
Well, I was pretty surprised that they used that one phrase in the whole article to make the headline for that research.
Right, because these news reports were based on an article that you recently published, which we were talking during the break. There was a whole lot of more stuff in that article besides that one finding.
That's right. Yeah, that was just one minor. It's a finding that a lot of people find interesting, but it was just one result that actually has been well recognized for many, many decades. And we were trying to really focus on something else as well.
Good, good. And we want to talk about that and your work, but give us a Tim Salthouse 101 first. Where are you from and how you ended up doing the work that you're doing?
Well, I got my PhD in psychology in 1974, and I immediately started doing research on aging and cognition. And I came to the University of Virginia in 2000. And so we started this project in 2001. My interests are trying to find out what are the changes that occur in normal, healthy aging and maybe see whether some of those might be related to the types of changes that occur in late life and dementia.
Yeah.
And our project's been going on since 2001. We've now had about 3,500 people from the Charlottesville area who've participated in our project one or more times since then. Over 1,300 have been in at least twice.
Wow. And what does the project involve? And we want to tell folks how they can volunteer and participate in this. What is it?
Well, we ask people to come into our laboratory three times for about 2 hours each, and they are asked to perform a variety of memory and other cognitive tests. Some of them are done on a computer. Others are with an examiner reading things out and asking them to remember them. It takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours for each of those sessions, but no single test takes very long. So you're doing different things the whole time that you're in there, and then when you come back the next time, you do some slightly different versions of them. Most people find the tests pretty challenging. Some find them frustrating, but what we're trying to do is have tests that are difficult enough so that we can pick up some differences that might be apparent throughout adulthood and not just the kinds of things that occur in very late life when you're just about to have a neurodegenerative disease.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Timothy Salthouse of the University of Virginia. On your website, under the title of Mental Aging Research, I found this that I thought was so interesting. It says, there are both gains and losses in cognitive functioning with increased age. Most of the gains occur in aspects of knowledge and acquired information, whereas losses have been documented in measures of efficiency of processing. It sounds to me so much like a computer in that, you know, you can keep putting so many more things on the computer, you know it's in there, and yet as the computer ages, and we all know this, it starts to slow down a little bit, and it starts to take a little bit longer to get the information out of the computer that you know is in there somewhere.
Yes, that's a pretty good analogy, that we have more information. But sometimes it's a little bit slower to get it out. Sometimes you have these blocks and hesitancies in getting exactly what you want. But one of the things that people sometimes underestimate is that tremendous growth in knowledge. And if you're talking about cognitive functioning, you have to talk about the efficiency part. Yes, the how quickly you can do things, how well you can remember unrelated types of pieces of information. But the knowledge that you've acquired with experience in our work and other people's research, that continuously increases, at least through the 60s.
Yeah, this ability to learn more.
To learn more, yeah. to integrate what you have already acquired with what you're doing in the current situation. One way that we measure this is with crossword puzzle types of tests. And when we've done research with crossword puzzles, the best performers are the people in their 60s and 70s. And even, surprisingly, even in rapid crossword puzzles. So if we give them only 15 minutes to work a weekend New York Times puzzle, the highest performers were those in their 60s and 70s.
We're talking with Dr. Timothy Salthouse of the University of Virginia. So tell us some more of these things that, you've learned in your years of this research about how the mind works, and let's unpack this whole these headlines that we read recently about how our abilities and efficiency of the mind really starts to slow down in our 20s.
Well, it is a little bit complicated issue here. If we look at people of different ages, so they're different people at the same point in time, if we compare 40-year-olds with 30-year-olds with 20-year-olds, we tend to find that on the average, the people in their 30s do a little bit lower in performance on some of these types of tests than people in their 20s. That's what's called a cross-sectional comparison. And we've known that for almost 100 years, that there are these age differences. So people of different ages are performing at different levels of performance. The complication has been that if we follow the same person over time, so instead of comparing a 40-year-old with a 30-year-old, we compare the 30-year-old when he's 30 and then again when he's 35 and again when he's 40, we don't get the same pattern of age. There we're measuring changes. And that's called a longitudinal comparison. And what we were interested in doing in our research was trying to find out, why is there that discrepancy? Why, if I follow the same person over time, he doesn't seem to decline, whereas if I look at different people at different ages, it looks like there's been decline. And what we found, which is relatively novel, not too many people have been doing this yet, we found that you're performing better the second time, in part because you remember what you did the previous time that you were tested. So that longitudinal comparisons, the same person over time,
right,
are somewhat distorted in terms of the age trends, because your prior experience makes your second assessment somewhat less realistic of what's happened to
you. You get better at the test.
You get better at the test, exactly. And we're trying to separate out these practice or retest effects. And that was really the main focus of this article that received so much publicity, is we think that we actually have three different ways of separating out these practice effects from age effects. And we found that in all three of the ways of assessing this, that it looks like the longitudinal comparisons overestimate the age trend. That is, they tend to minimize age declines because you're doing better because of the prior experience.
Right. You get better at the test, so you sort of mask the aging that is actually really taking place.
That's right.
Because you're familiar with how to get tested.
That's exactly right, yes.
We're talking with Timothy Salthouse of the University of Virginia. His research on aging made international headlines recently. I was telling you before we went on the air, I'll be 43 tomorrow, and I noticed a few years ago, maybe a couple of years ago, maybe three, that when I would talk to someone and it came time to mention someone's name that we were talking about, and embarrassingly, sometimes when I'm even looking at someone that I know well, the name just can't come to my tongue. I just, for some reason, I remember everything about the person except the name. Number one, I assume this is common. And number two, what's happening?
It is very common. We're still not sure exactly what's happening there, but we think it has to do with some type of weakening of the connections among your pieces of information in your brain, such that when you're trying to have a specific piece of information retrieved, in this case, the name of the individual, there may only be one representation of that name. So you really have to have everything converging on that.
On that one fact, yeah.
Yes, on that one fact or that one node in your network. Whereas in most circumstances in everyday life, there are different ways of expressing the same thought, or you can refer to something with a variety of different ways of capturing that. And so it's proper names that tend to show the first type of difficulty in retrieval, or sometimes...
Because there's just the one name.
There's just the one, yeah. And sometimes we measure this in a laboratory with what's called confrontational naming. So we'll show you a picture of a rather unusual object that's not very frequent, and we ask you to give us the name of that. And a lot of times people know what the name is, but they can't get it out at, you know, in that moment when we're asking them to do it. And then a little bit later, they come back and say, oh, I remember what that was. And then they certainly knew it.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes accessing it at the right moment is something that does increase with age.
What's next after that? Because I would assume it gets harder to find the names of other things.
Well, yeah, that's one indication of memory, and then of a memory problem. More problems in short-term memory tend to occur, that you tend not to remember details of things that happened. But a lot of times people have a slight memory concern or memory problem, and they think it's serious. And I once heard a distinction that I think is very useful here, that if you can't remember where your keys are, don't worry. That's normal memory problems. If you're holding the keys in your hand and you don't know what they are, then you have a problem with memory.
It reminds me of my poor grandfather, who was healthy as an ox. He lived into his late 80s, but beginning in his 60s, he suffered from dementia. And he would walk around the house with his hat on his head, looking for his hat.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, and he would go to every room and just say, have you seen my hat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could tell him, Pop, it's on your head. And he'd go, oh, good, there it is. And then he'd sort of sit there for a minute and go, I got to go find my hat.
Yeah.
Then he'd go off down the hall.
Yeah. That's a different type of cognitive problem than what I study in my laboratory.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to study the healthy, normal parts of or phases of aging. And we hope that in 20 or 30 years that some of the people that we're following now will be informative later about what are the things that happen or that how people do things in middle life that may be related to the likelihood of a disease like dementia in later life.
Yeah, and is there any possible signs that we might be able to see a red flag?
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we knew right now that people who were in their 30s and 40s did certain things, were physically active, had the right kind of diet or whatever, or had certain types of interaction patterns with other people, that they were less likely 30 years from now to have a
dementia or Alzheimer's.
Dementia.
Yes. Yeah, that would be wonderful. I've also heard, and I've had folks on the program who do brain research, who encourage people getting into their 50s and 60s and 70s to challenge themselves with learning new things. Go learn the piano, go learn a new language, you know, learn pottery or whatever it is, that the brain can be like a muscle and you can benefit actually from learning totally new things later in life. Would you agree with that?
Well, there's still some controversy about the role of this type of mental training or cognitive stimulation. But as far as I know, it absolutely does not do any harm. So I encourage people to do that. I would actually add that they should be doing it throughout life, not just starting in 40s and 50s.
Yeah, why wait till you retire?
Well, exactly. Yeah. And our research and others shows that some of these differences, and we think changes, are occurring in the 20s and 30s. Some of the results suggest that as much of the difference that you will ever experience, say by 85, has already occurred by about age 60. So about a half of it has occurred by then.
Wow.
So you want to start doing things early to prevent these types of declines.
Yeah, and what can we do?
I mean, well, yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, I don't. The evidence really isn't there yet of what will absolutely prevent decline and prevent Alzheimer's disease. What we know are certain risk factors, and these are things that people who have these characteristics are less likely to have dementia later in life. But there's other factors that could be involved. But people who have a healthy diet, who are physically active, who are cognitively active, who have a social network, who don't smoke, who have moderate, not no consumption of alcohol, but moderate consumption of alcohol, those are all things associated with protection. They don't necessarily mean that you're not going to have some normal age-related cognitive decline.
But you're not adding to the risk factors. But,
that's
yeah.
right. You're actually probably minimizing the chance, but the cause-effect relationship there is still ambiguous. Those are correlates, but there may be some other factor that we don't know what it is that's responsible for people doing those things and also responsible for the disease.
Yeah, yeah. Timothy Salthouse is my guest. He's lab director at the Salthouse Cognitive Aging Lab at the University of Virginia. Now tell us how people can participate if they're listening and they want to be a part of your research and perhaps come in and take some of these tests?
Well, most of our research starts in mid-May. And if people are interested, they could call our lab. The number is 982-6320. And when they call, it may be a couple of weeks before people can get back and make the schedule for them. But we are open during the summer from May through August from 8 in the morning until 8 in the evening. We accommodate people's schedules wherever, whenever they want to come in, we can accommodate it. And what the expectation is that you will come in three times for 2 hours each and then also fill out some questionnaires at home. And we pay people $120 for their participation in this project.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great.
Well, and most people find it kind of interesting. I mean, some are challenged by it.
Well, we had a caller the other day who said he's been doing it and just actually really enjoys it, looks forward to it.
Well, we do have many people who call in every beginning of the summer and say, is it time for me to come in again? So they want to come back in.
Yeah. Let me ask you before I let you go, and you may have answered this, but what do you think it is that most people don't know or don't get about aging and the mind?
Well, I think that it's a very complex system. Some people say it's the most complex structure in the world, the, you know, understanding the human mind. But with respect to aging, there are these declines in some aspects, kind of the mental gymnastics, how quickly you can do things, how rapidly you can access information. But you're growing in knowledge, and surprisingly, there are domains of emotion and regulation of your mood where the average person in their 60s and 70s are much better than young and middle-aged adults. They're better able to tolerate emotional fluctuations. They regulate them better. They're less likely to be depressed, to be anxious. So it's,
the news isn't all bad when it comes to aging.
Absolutely not. No. Yeah. Many people look back and say the best times of their years are in their 60s and 70s and 80s.
That's great news. Timothy Salthouse from the University of Virginia, thank you so much. And I'm going to remember that number because I'm going to call you come in this summer.
I hope you do come in.
Yeah, I will indeed. That'll be fun. 982-6320. 982-6320 is the number over at the Aging Lab. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.